to have Jordan Smith and Dave Mattson here to talk about a large variety of topics. And I kind of want to start with the craziness that is the NBA trade deadline. I just talked with Jordan about this last week, but things have really gotten crazy in the last couple days. And today, in regards to the biggest rumor, which is Anthony Davis, sounds like the Lakers pulled out, which that's something I advocated for a couple days ago. I just think it's ridiculous. Like at some point you have to kind of stand up for yourselves, and like I'm almost hoping that the Lakers wage war on the Pelicans and just kind of smear their name amongst other teams, because their trade tactics were kind of bush league in my opinion. Like they're constantly asking for more, then the Lakers, all right, we'll do it. No, we want more. So it's like it's clear they don't want to trade with the Lakers, and it's kind of ridiculous the way that they've handled this whole thing. That's my opinion on the Anthony Davis situation. Just stupid.
Go for it, Jordan. I want to hear your thoughts, man. So, even though they quote unquote pulled out today, be ready for some aggressive. They'll go hard after it one more time, two more times. There'll be some more Woj tweets about a new package or something like tomorrow or maybe right before the trade deadline. I would not get comfortable, Lakers fans. I think it's a strategy to say, nah, never mind. We're not even going to do this. And then maybe the Pelicans start questioning their tactics and then they end up with another offer tomorrow. So I agree, like, the Pelicans are being ridiculous and greedy. And I think they're just,
They're bitter.
they've got to get, they're bitter, yeah. I think they're just thinking, they got to give us an absolutely crazy offer for us to actually trade in before the deadline. So let's see how crazy they'll get. And so.
The Pelicans are up in the night. If they think they're getting something similar from Boston, they are the dumbest human beings that have ever existed in sports. The last two trades that Boston has made has been so lopsided in their favor. There's no way they're going to shell out every good young player they have besides Tatum and every pick they have. That would go so against everything they've ever done in the history of their franchise. I would be blown away. I would be willing to bet my home that Boston's offer is underwhelming come the summer.
I don't mind what the Pelicans. I think I can. Well, I shouldn't say I don't mind. Like, I think I can understand where they're coming from, right? Like, they're not, like, they don't need to offload Davis this go around, and so you might as well just ask for the farm and see if the Lakers are desperate enough to actually, go for it. And if they're not, you go into the summer, most likely, if they pass this NBA trade deadline for this year. You go into the summer, and now you get Boston in there. Maybe you get like a bidding war going on. Maybe it backfires on him. Maybe it alienates the Lakers enough. And maybe you're right. Boston's trade package isn't nearly glamorous as the Lakers' initial package was. But I don't really blame the Pelicans for it. I mean, there's really no pressure on them to make a move right now. And so, sure, like, I think it's a really low risk. Like, why not just be super greedy and ask for a ton of assets from the Lakers and see if they're desperate enough to pull the trigger?
Yeah, I don't blame the Pelicans either. I'm just kind of hoping, if I were Rob Pelinka or Magic Johnson, I'd be offended by this, and I would be like, "All right, we're not going to trade with you. Forget that," And I just think I don't blame the Pelicans for doing it, but I'm hoping that the Lakers are just like, this is so out of bounds that we're not even going to entertain this. This is ridiculous, because there's never been a trade made where one team gives up. I mean, I read some tweet today from an LA Times writer that they wanted 8 picks plus 6 players, 14 people for two. That's ridiculous.
That's insane.
That is crazy. On the Celtics note, I think that if they don't trade Davis now and it gets to the summer, if Kyrie lets them know he's re-signing, I think you will see a pretty nice offer from them. I think it'll be Tatum, maybe like Smart or Hayward, and then a couple of those first round picks that are this for this year, and then probably some future picks as well. But if Irving is going to leave, that's when. So if you're a Lakers fan, what you want is for Kyrie to not re-sign, to let them know he's not re-signing, and then that Celtics package they're not going to include Tatum. And at that point, I think the Lakers could win a bidding war next summer.
Yep.
That's kind of my thoughts are. I think they will give him a dang good offer if they know Kyrie's going to stay.
Yeah, I hope the I hope the Lakers offer come the summer, if that happens, is a bag of stale Sun Chips and 2 second round picks, because it's just, I'm so bugged by the trade tactics. It's just like, at some point you have to stand up for yourself and just be like, all right, if this is how you're gonna treat me, then you're getting nothing. Sorry. Like, good luck trying to get Tatum. You're not gonna get him. Good luck trying to get anybody. And if a trade doesn't happen in the summer, his value is just going to go down and down and down.
Yeah. That is, I think, the one risk that the Pelicans are running here. Other than that, I think what the Pelicans and what the Lakers have done is totally, like, I think it just, it totally makes sense, right? The
yeah.
Pelicans are asking for way more than they should, and the Lakers are just pumping the brakes like, whoa, yeah. No way. Like, that's ridiculous, you know? And so, like, it's kind of fun, like, seeing the drama. To Jordan's point, I would be surprised, and maybe it happens, but I think Boston is committed to Tatum. I could be wrong, but I don't see him as part of any kind of a future package for Davis. I think they hold on him. I could see something more like Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Gordon Hayward, and a couple of first-round picks or something like that. I don't think they touched Tatum.
Which, for the record, that's a terrible trade. Why do you want Marcus Smart, who just signed a 4-year extension, and Gordon Hayward, who still has 2 years left and looks like a bad NBA player? How is that even a good trade?
No, it's not. I just saying that is what I imagine the package would be that Boston would be willing to offer, like something along those lines.
I hope it is, because then it's just like, hey, you guys are idiots. Here, have a bunch of crap. And if they were to take it, it would be so Boston. Like, what they did to the Nets a couple years was unbelievable. And the Cavs. How they got Kyrie for nothing. That would be typical Boston. Danny Ainge, if he pulls that off, you just have to tip your cap to that dude for turning nothing into something. It's incredible.
As crazy as all these things have been, I keep hearing from people that I see on TV, I read tweets. When people are asked, like, all right, gun to your head, is he dealt before the deadline? And a few people that I really follow and trust say yes, which I think is
wow.
So, like, Matt Kellerman said that on First Take today, Kevin O'Connor, a bunch of people that I listen to and have some knowledge, at least, their gut feeling is that he's a Laker by Thursday at 3. So, there's a storm. There's still a storm coming. And, you know, Lakers still might say no. I think that's too crazy, or the Pelicans may still ask for too much. But when it really gets down to those pressure moments and the Pelicans really have to decide if they're willing to wait and risk Davis getting hurt or the Celtics offer not being what they think it is, I'm going to join those people. I think that Davis is a Laker on Thursday.
I am maintaining my point, Dave. I don't know if you heard this or not, that if this trade were to happen, I think it would set the franchise back. I think that maybe there could be some momentum that brings another star in, but I have a hard time seeing anyone from the West beating the Warriors anytime soon, even if people leave. So I just feel like it could all be for naught. And then two or three years from now, you're the Cavs. I don't want to be the Cleveland Cavaliers.
It could be. It could be another Miami Heat situation where it's just kind of a little bit more staggered than obviously the Heat stuff was. But, you know, you pick up AD now in the summer, maybe you pick up a Kyrie or you pick up a Jimmy Butler or somehow you bring in KD, you know, something like that. And suddenly you have these three big stars and you can just fill around them with role players, and you're probably, that's a team that could compete, you know, for a championship. And so it could. I mean, you're right. I mean, I think it's a gamble, but it could also work out in the Lakers' favor as well. I don't necessarily think it's a guarantee that it sets the franchise back if their original, not their original offer, but their latest offer that, you know, the Pelicans been asked for like four more picks or whatever, but if they do that latest offer, which essentially guts their team almost, you know, I guess they keep Hart, and do they keep Zubac? I can't remember if he was part of that trade. But anyway, like, I think even if they do that, I don't necessarily think it's a guarantee it sets the franchise back.
Yeah.
But I guess only time will tell.
Let's switch.
I would say the exact opposite. If they don't make this trade, I think their franchise sets back, because it doesn't look like any other free agents are coming next year. The year after that, there's really no one great available. And LeBron and these young guys is not winning a championship.
No.
In my opinion.
Huh.
I would say that LeBron and AD aren't winning a championship either. So one team keeps you interesting, and the other team potentially crashes and burns. I don't know. It's hard.
Would it be easier though for the Lakers if they had AD and LeBron to now sell another big name free agent to come, or do you think it'd be easier if they retain these young players and just have LeBron for them to come off? Another guy to come over.
Jordan thinks yes. I'm starting to feel like nobody wants to play with LeBron James anymore.
Well, she lives there, Robbie.
Everyone that's played with him doesn't like him. What'd you say, Jordan?
He said State of the Union, fake news. It seems crazy to me that the people wouldn't want to play with LeBron, at least on the court. He seems like a teammate that just makes you better, right?
I mean, right.
He demands so much attention. He's a phenomenal distributor. Like, it just seems like it's a no-brainer. Like, it seems like people would want or would love to go play with him.
It is a no-brainer, but we're in the midst of an era in the NBA in which people are clamoring to get to New York. How does that make any sense? Where
that
it's
is
like,
crazy. Yeah.
I don't know. I can't think of anyone that's up that is like, absolutely, that's, you know, I would be interested in that. Can you think of any players, Jordan, that would jump at the chance? Maybe Kyrie? Is that the only one?
I mean, I have something ahead, I don't know. But I know KD doesn't want to play with LeBron, but like he's the only one that's really come out and said anything.
I thought Kawhi was the same way.
Yeah, I was going to say Kawhi.
Well, but Kawhi's never said anything in public. That's just hearsay.
Yeah.
KD came out and said something. I don't think you're getting Kawhi anyway, whether you have LeBron or not. But I think the point is, though, it's not LeBron who would bring someone. It would be AD. He's only 25.
Right.
So people, that third star would be AD if the person's going to be there long term. That was this game of winning. And LeBron's going to give you know, these last 3 or 4 years before he does his next thing. So I don't think you need to worry about, well, people play with LeBron. I think AD is the one that will bring other stars or, you know, B-level stars who can help you win a championship. I really feel like KD's going to New York.
What an idiot.
The West is going to be more open.
Sorry to cut you off.
What's up?
I said, sorry to cut you off, but I just think he's an idiot if he does that.
He's sick of being in someone else's limelight. And he wants to have his own team and try to win a chip without Steph or Westbrook. Or just he thought that winning a championship in Golden State would kind of silence the haters, but it hasn't. So now he wants to go somewhere in like New York and win.
Just a recap, Kevin Durant is sick of winning NBA Finals MVP and not having to do any work on the court, never gets double teamed, has a good time, lives in San Francisco. What?
It's not me. The Knicks just traded away their whole team because they think they're sure that he's coming. I don't, I mean, everyone I listen to is like, yeah, it seems like KD is gone there. It might be stupid, but that's what he wants to do. So, good for him. Break up the Warriors. I hate those guys. I'm happy.
Yeah, they have become another level of unlikable with Cousins.
Yeah, between Cousins and Draymond and High Clay, like, it's a little too much.
Hey, don't you diss on Clay. That's blasphemy. Dave.
I'm kind of interested to see what... Sorry, I'm just going to say, like, and then we can move on. I'm kind of interested to see what happens with the Knicks here, because like that whole Porzingis deal actually seems like it was pretty balanced. Like when it came out, that didn't Dallas give 2 first-round picks?
Yes.
As well.
Yes.
And so suddenly it seems a little bit more balanced, but it all happened so fast. Like I'm kind of with Jordan. I gotta feel like they've got assurances from like one of these big free agents that someone's coming out of the offseason, and that's why they were so quick to either pull the trigger. That's why they have this deal in place, and then you know they announced the stuff. But you know, it just seems like I'll be interested to see what happens with the offseason. Like maybe it just totally backfires and nobody goes over to the Knicks, which would be hilarious.
Yeah.
But it will be interesting to see if KD had the win. I am curious to hear what you think about, yeah, like the Jazz.
Yes, let's switch to the Jazz. There's concrete evidence that they're talking about Conley and Rubio. What are your initial thoughts, Dave?
So what I've seen is that the offer that's on the table is Rubio, Cephalosha. It sounds like another player, like a Grayson Allen, plus maybe Efe Udo, or first round or second round. Or Conley, something along those lines, and maybe another contract or something from Memphis.
Yep.
I'd be totally fine with that. Yeah. I actually think that would be great. I know, Matt, we talked about this. I think Drew Holiday would be amazing to get, but I just don't think he's available, right?
Right.
Just not on the market. And if Conley is, and Memphis is willing to deal him, and that's the deal, and they accept that, I think that's a great deal for the Jazz. I know Conley's a little bit older, and he's coming off that serious injury, which is kind of my reservation about him, but he's automatically an upgrade at the point guard position. He's a good defender. He kind of comes from that Memphis, gritty, defensive style of basketball, which is essentially what Utah plays, so it seems like he'd be a natural fit in there. He's a good scorer, and the Jazz need that. They need someone who can kind of share that load and take a little bit away from Donovan. And I think Conley, I think he gives that to you. And he's still young enough, to your point, even though I was making fun of it earlier, he's still young enough that I think you can get, you know, you can play out the rest of his contract with the final 2 years of his contract, and you can still get a lot of good time and good quality production from him. So, if those reports are true, and if that is what the offer is, I think it's awesome for Utah if they can pull it off.
You like it, Jordan?
I think the Jazz should trade anyone and everyone other than Mitchell if they can get better. I think that point guard and small forward are two positions that they are subpar in, and I think even if they have to offer, like, take one of those players out and put Exum in there, I think you just have to try to get better. Being like a market like Salt Lake City, sorry, Jazz fans, you're not desirable. So when you get these players like Donovan, you've got to do everything in your power to improve the team, or else you're just going to be in this, like, you know, we make the playoffs. Depending on the matchup, we have a chance to win the first round, and then we're going to get smoked in the second. You know, just beyond my phrase, but someone called it second round purgatory. Or you're good enough to make the playoffs, but you can't really make any real noise. Then you never get draft picks, and no one's going to sign in Utah. So the only way you're ever going to get better is if you make trades. You got to be creative and, you know, reach for the stars sometimes and make big moves. And I get sick of hearing Jazz fans wanting to be patient. Exum and Favors are not good. Like, you guys, if anyone wants them and they'll give you an upgrade, upgrade them. Like, you can't just... or just sit on our young players and watch them develop. No, like, you're never going to win, and then you'll just – and then Mitchell will – I mean, they're must Jazz fans. Like, Mitchell will call Davis and request a trade and get the hell out of here, or heck out of here. I get so frustrated with Jazz fans. Like, they think that they're – I don't know. They think they're something they're not. So, if they can get Conley, even if they need to pay a little extra to get him, they should do it.
Here's my, my thing on Conley is I feel like, and this isn't being talked about enough, is I feel like it's almost like a no risk situation because of his deal, you shouldn't have to pay something crazy, and maybe you do have to throw in an extra pick, but whatever, because, you know, you expect to be in the playoffs. If it doesn't pan out next season, so next season he has 2 years left on his deal, and then the year after that, he becomes an expiring contract, which you can move if you need to. So everyone is like, oh my, the contract's so crazy. It's only crazy for one season. And then after that, it almost becomes an asset. So, I don't see any risk.
No, I'm kind of with you, man. If I remember right, I was reading something. I think most everybody on the Jazz, I think like Donovan and Rudy, like those contracts come up to like 2021, 2022, which is right around that time you're talking about with Conley.
Yep.
And so that's kind of fits in with that timeline, right, where you're going to be re-signing both those guys, you know, and then building up a team around them anyways. And so, you know, you got that flexibility to move Conley at that point or maybe his contract expires that season as well. I can't remember. But I'm kind of with you. And I think, to George's point, I'm a little like one of those Jazz fans. I actually think that Dante's got not like all-star potential, obviously, but I think he's a solid guard. And I think he's a game-changer on the defensive end. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that we lost both games against Portland when Dante was hurt. Because the first two games, when we played him, Dante guarded Damian Lillard a lot of the time and did a really good job on him. And I think that was a big part of the reason why the Jazz won those games. And so I haven't given up on Dante. I think he does need, I think there's some potential there. The problem is the dude's just so injured that it just may not be worth it at this point. But obviously the Jazz think it is enough to invest in him a little bit.
I gave up on him years ago.
here's my question. The starting five of Conley, Donovan Mitchell, Joe Ingles, Derek Favors, Rudy Gobert, and then you bring in, you know, Crowder, Kyle Korver, Dante Exum off the bench. How's that team do in the West?
Second round. But here's the thing.
They might win two games in the second round.
Yeah, I was going to say second round, but if they catch a break, they could catch themselves in the conference finals. That happens. But
yeah,
the thing I was going to say, the other thing I like about Conley is I think he's just better than Rubio at everything. And so it allows Donovan Mitchell to be more of the scorer. And Conley's just a better initiate the offense, capable three-point shooter, good defender. I just think there's not a real duplication of skills there. They complement each other.
To provide some spacing, especially with Colbert and Favors on the floor, you have both guys who can't shoot great, plus Rubio. There's just not a lot of space to operate. I also have another take on this Jazz thing. If the Jazz front office has not at least called the Pelicans and offered Colbert and Exum and whatever else, like just to see, like see if they didn't get hung up on, They should just resign. You gotta swing for the fences, man. You know, Sidek Mitchell and Davis would be, even if it's for a year and a half, so much excitement that brings to the fan base. I mean, that would be. And then if it's by next February, it's not working, and you just trade him and you load up again. Like, I feel like teams like the Jazz, and that's not just them, I'm sorry to pick on them. You gotta be way more creative and not be so conservative. You gotta try things.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's almost whoever's listening, hire me. I will be a three-year contract, couple $1 million. I will be a creative. I'll make deals. Someone hire me. I'll get you some stars for a couple years. That'll be great. Jordan Smith, GM.
I'm available. Yeah, the problem is, I think the Jazz, every team wants to win a championship, but I think the Jazz, like, primary goal is to be relevant. You know, I think winning a championship would be nice, but they're not going to sell out to do it.
I do think, to Jordan's point, I think for the Jazz, because they're a small market team, and usually those teams don't have success in attracting, you know, big-name free agents. You have to kind of strike gold in the draft, and the Jazz have now with Rudy and Donovan.
Yep.
And so I think especially with Donovan, right? So to Jordan's point, I think it is the time now that you have to make a move, right? Because you've got these guys that could potentially get you over the edge. You need to put a team around them. And so I'm with Jordan. I don't know. I feel like the front office, though, they're committed to Rudy and Donovan, so I highly doubt that. I don't know. I don't think they would have offered Rudy for Anthony Davis. Maybe they would have, though. I definitely think that they want to make a move. I think they recognize they need to make a move now to improve the team, to get them better, to at least give them a shot at being competitive in the West, and maybe making a Western Conference Finals run, or, you know, lightning in a bottle, maybe all the Warriors just, I don't know, break ankles or something, and they're able to, make a run to the finals. But I definitely think that they feel like they need to make a move now. So I'd be surprised. I shouldn't say I would be surprised because it's the Jazz, but I think that they do make a move before the trade deadline.
I do too. I think it's going to be a second round pick for some guy that's off the bench on some bum team.
That would be so Jazz. Caldwell Pope.
They're gonna add.
Jazz Lakers pick. Caldwell Pope.
Who's that dude from Phoenix? They're gonna add Holmes, that backup center. Holmes for Udo and a second round pick.
That would be amazing.
All right, let's move on to the next topic, which is BYU football, something we're very familiar with, all three of us. I think that spring ball is turning out to be exactly what BYU needs. I don't know if that's going to result in short-term success, but what I'm referring to is Dick Harmon wrote today that Zach Wilson is basically not going to participate in any live work. He's going to be at all the meetings and blah, 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 but shoulder surgery is going to prevent him from throwing in the spring. And I think that's great on a number of levels. One, I think it allows the coaching staff to preach the you've got to earn your spot, which is important because in college football, people that don't feel like they have a chance to play leave. And the last thing we need from the quarterback position, a position in which we haven't had one guy play every game since, what, Taysom's sophomore year? So it's been a minute. We need the talent, the Jaren Halls, the Critchlows. We need those people to stick around because we never know what's going to happen. History proves that multiple quarterbacks are going to play. And then on top of that, getting Jaren Hall some valuable reps, I think, will pay dividends in the event that Zach Wilson gets hurt. Cross your fingers he doesn't. But, with Zach Wilson getting the bowl practices and the better half of his freshman year, I think he got some quality time, and having him for spring ball would have been nice, but I think in the long term, not having him for spring ball might be better for the program. That's kind of my spring ball hot take. Jordan, do you agree? You don't.
I don't know, man. I never would say that an injury to your starting quarterback throwing arm is a positive, but I do get your point. I don't think that's what most fan bases are hoping for, but I get your point of getting other people reps, and especially with this new transfer role, it seems like everyone is just transferring left and right, and so you definitely need depth at that position. I'm a little worried that Jaren Hall is just going to play baseball.
For real.
I see a tweet that he's with the baseball team, so I don't know. I can't fully agree with you, but I get your point.
Look, and I'm taking Dick Harmon at his word that this is a preventative surgery to correct something from high school rather than a serious issue. Because if it's a serious issue, that's bad. That's really bad. So,
yeah.
I'm leaving some room to change my point of view depending on the truth around the surgery. But I'm taking
classic
it at face
Matt.
Value.
Oh, unbelievable. Just prepping his backpack, of course. I'm just kidding. No, that was going to be my point was, Tanner Mangum, he looked pretty darn good as a freshman as well. And then he messes up his shoulder and has surgery and just doesn't ever look the same. Like, his whole motion just changed, and it just was bad. And so if it's not, like, yeah, if it's not a serious thing where it is just going to jack up his throwing motion and he's not going to be the same player, if it's not that, then Matt, I could see where you're coming from, how this could be a positive thing for the program. I'm also with Jordan, though, where, Matt, you're trying to sound like me, dude. Like, you're everything into a positive here. Like,
oh, geez.
I don't think it's ever a good thing for your... Yep, those things of penalty, man. Wow. I don't even think I would have been like, you know, Zach Wilson, shoulder surgery on his throwing arm. Yes! This is exactly what the program needed, you know?
Look, in my defense, though, I did say this on the pod many months ago, that even if Zach Wilson was healthy, I wanted them to come out and say that the quarterback job was up for grabs, because I want there to be competition. There was that year in which Tanner Mangum was given the job. It was before his junior year, I believe, and he even admitted later, yeah, like, I was the starter, and maybe I didn't work as hard. And so, even though we all knew that Zach deserved to be the starter, I wanted there to be a competition. So that probably wasn't going to happen. So the next best thing is Zach is out, and now some other people get some reps. That's all I'm saying.
Dave, I'm starting to get a little – hey, Dave, I think I'm getting a feeling that Matt's being nefarious here. I think truly what he's hoping for is that Zach is actually really hurt. That tanks our season. And then they fire Kalani. That's what he's really trying to get at.
I cannot confirm nor deny that is my end game.
Well, also, we all know your love of Jaren Hall as well. I mean, you have always talked that guy up. So
I do love Jaren Hall.
I think he's pretty good, too. I am with you. I actually think that the Cougars are in a pretty good spot when it comes to the quarterback position. I think Wilson, I think Hall both have the ability to do well, win some games, and lead this team a successful season. How are you guys feeling about the running back position?
Bad. Very bad.
We signed a JUCO guy, right?
Yes.
Preferred walk-on or something?
I'll tell you what. Here's a take that might blow you guys away. Word on the street, a.k.a. Twitter, is that BYU is going to change their offense to be more 4 and 5 wide to account for the lack of depth, so there'll be less running back. If that happens, I'll tip my cap to the offensive staff, because I think that does make sense in this situation. We've got a bevy of good tight ends and enough good receivers that we should be 4 and 5 wide 75% of the time, in my opinion. So if that happens, then I don't think the running back thing will be a problem. If we try and trot out the same old offense as last year, it's going to be a huge problem.
Well, we kind of saw that in the bowl game, right? We only had a couple of running backs healthy, and we threw the ball over the field. So I think there's some credence to that might actually be legit. So I agree.
Yeah.
I like Katoa. I don't know if he's big enough to be an every down back for a whole season. But I really like the way he runs and catches the ball out of the backfield. Yeah, we are definitely lacking depth there.
No, I agree. I think Katoa's fine. I think is Kavika Fanua, is he staying at running back if he comes back?
I have no idea.
He's still a running back, isn't he?
I don't know.
Well, then there's the grad transfer from Rice. Apparently he's coming to BYU.
We can't get him into school. The admissions are preventing him from getting in. Welcome to BYU.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, well, maybe we don't have him coming. But, yeah, to your point, I think it's smart to adjust the offense to what you have. I think Grimes I think if he can do that, like you said, I think it'll show that he's ready to be a good offensive coordinator. I think it's a no-brainer to do it. Zach Wilson's got a heck of an arm. Hopefully he'll still have a heck of an arm, next year.
Hopefully he has an arm.
hopefully he still has an arm. And like you said, we got the playmakers to do it. We got the tight ends to do it. We got the receivers to do it. So it makes sense to go to more of like an air raid style offense and not run the ball as much.
All right. I think unless anyone has anything else to add with football, I just want to squeeze in one quick BYU Hoops question, and we'll call it a day. All right. No one has anything to add. Okay. So on to basketball. It's a simple question. I'll start with you, Dave. Is Gavin Baxter the savior of BYU basketball?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know if I thought about it quite like that. I don't think he's the savior of BYU basketball, just simply because I don't think BYU basketball needed saving.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm fully on board the Dave Rose train again, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm just kidding. No, I do think Baxter is phenomenal, and I think that his progression that we've seen in the last few games is without a doubt the highlight of the season so far. I mean, he has come on really strong. I thought he'd be pretty good. I didn't think he would be this good. I definitely think it's a big shot in the arm for the program. I'm also impressed, too, and I know this still isn't good enough, but, I mean, we're sitting at number two in the WCC. And, yes, the gap between us and number one in Gonzaga is massive, but we're in a decent spot, you know. We can hold on to the two seed, which definitely isn't a guarantee. I'm sure we'll lose, you know, some of these games. But we've made it through, like, the first half of the season without totally botching it or having one of those kind of head-scratching losses. I mean, our losses so far have been to, you know, the two teams tied for number three, both of those on the road, and the number one team at home, who is just so far superior to us that we have a chance. I mean, that's not too bad.
Jordan?
No. Not too bad. Oh, God. Okay. Bring it, Jordan. Bring it. I'm ready. Baxter is not the savior, because in order to be saved, I mean, we would make the NCAA tournament, and that is not happening. So there's no saving this season. We were NIT before Baxter. BB will be NIT after Baxter. I don't know if what the Batman quote, he's the hero we deserve, or the hero, I don't know, I can't remember. But he's the hero we deserve, probably what it is. No, he's been great. The dunks and the energy he brings is great, but we've seen a lot of help in a lot of different positions. Three players, like Hobbs, Childs, and Baxter, are not enough to compete in this conference, and our coaching's been lackluster, and it's just sad. I mean, it's not terrible. Like I said, it's okay. It's not too bad, as Dave would say. But it's just not inspiring. It's not like getting me excited to go buy season tickets. Or, you know,
I'm turning down tickets. That's how much I'm enjoying. I've been offered tickets a couple times, and I'm like, I'd rather take a Lush bath bomb bath than go to the Marriott Center. I will. Here's a hot take, though. I actually think, if you can believe the reports, and I don't, but let's just pretend that the reports are true, if Jesse Wade is as good as people are saying, he may be the savior. Because if he can become a reliable three-point shooter and open things up, then maybe this team can get back to the tournament. But without a reliable perimeter scorer, we're doomed. We're never going to the tournament again. So unless Jesse Wade is that guy, we're stuck.
I have a question. I think more important even than Gavin Baxter was Nick Emery's performance.
Don't you even think about complimenting him, Dave. I will not allow you to compliment Nick Emery.
Oh, I still think he's an idiot, but, you know, hey, the guy can play.
This is how it always is with Dave, Jordan. He would have burnt Nick Emery at the stake a month ago. And now that he makes five threes in a game, he's slowly earning his forgiveness. It's incredible.
I still think he was a complete bozo. But as long as the guy can actually play and contribute, then, maybe that will help redeem him a little bit.
I still think he's the smartest player on the team. Get as much as you can in your window. Get it all. Get some more cash. Why stop at a Hollywood? Let's get some foreign trips in here as well. They might be a little harder to track.
My favorite part, and this is not just me, everyone's saying this, but Alonzo Ball, his dad, coming out and saying, if you guys trade Lonzo, don't trade to the Pelicans, trade to the Suns.
He's like, yeah, that was amazing. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
He should be jumping at any trade offer that gets Lonzo Ball's butt out of L.A., Matt.
I like Lonzo.
That's like me liking Dante Exum. All
right? Shots fired.
You do like Dante Exum. Point out,
they're basically the same player.
One guy's a sophomore, and the other guy's been in the league for 15 years. That's the difference.
Oh, my gosh. Dante's basically a sophomore with how much he's actually played.
Isn't it like his sixth season?
I believe this is his fourth season. And he's been injured and out for two of those years, I believe. Something along those lines. All right, here's the other question for you guys. I know it's not positive. So he's healthy. I like Dante. All right, now here's a question for you guys. Go back to the NBA. Which is more likely to happen, you think? Anthony Davis to the Lakers by the trade deadline and Mike Conley to the Jazz?
Conley to the Jazz, I think, is more likely.
I'm going to just double down and say Davis to the Lakers.
That would be the most unbelievable turnaround in the history of sports. Basically mocking the Lakers in trade negotiations and then finally making the trade. That would be nuts.
And maybe they're brilliant. They just keep throwing outrageous things and then they finally offer a realistic trade that still favors the Pelicans and then the Lakers just jump on it. Maybe it's a tactic they're using.
Maybe.
We need 10 picks. All right. 4 is good enough. Let's make sure.
Oh, my goodness. That reminds me of that. Have you guys seen the movie Celtic Pride?
No.
Dave, I'm telling you, as a Jazz fan, you have got to watch this movie. I'll even lend it to you. It's about the Jazz and Celtics getting to the NBA Finals, and two crazy Celtics fans kidnap the Jazz star player so they can win the championship. And there's this moment in the movie, where this Jazz star player does something bad, and the coach benches him. And the coach is, if I believe, he's Shooter McGavin from Happy Gilmore. And he's like, sit on the bench!
Yeah.
Feel the bench! And he's like yelling at him for like maybe 30 seconds. And he's like, all right, you suffered enough. Now get back in there. Maybe that's the trade awesome. Tactic. All right, Lakers, you suffered enough. Four exactly. picks is enough.
I will say, I kind of get this irrational, like, kind of joy at this time of year. And it's something I feel like that the NBA just, and it's also the nature of that sport, but it's something that the NBA just does right. Like, free agency and trade deadlines, man, just because, like, the NBA, one player really can make a huge difference, you know, for a team. And it's kind of exciting to see. I don't know. I'm excited. I'm excited for what the next couple of days hold. I think there's a lot of drama that will unfold.
Yeah, I think you're right. Any final thoughts from you guys, or was that enough for one day? Because I certainly enjoyed it. Not as much fighting as I was hoping for, but...
I will say, I will close with this. Dave Rose is the greatest basketball coach in BYU history.
There's no argument there.
Untouchable.
No argument there. And I'm ready to start talking.
Trade Rudy.
There's no way Utah trades Rudy. No way.
Yeah.
All right.
I think everybody besides Rudy and Donovan are on the table. But, yeah, there's no way that Rudy's going
to
trade.
I'm kind of bummed we didn't get to the Super Bowl. I wanted to break that down. But
I'm not. That was not worth talking about. That was worth
me and Jordan were
we
were completely wrong in everything we talked about prior to the game. And I think the thing that bothers me the most about the Super Bowl is everyone's like, Tom Brady was bad. It's just Jared Goff was worse.
He wasn't bad. I mean, he had close to 300 yards passing. Like, it's not terrible. And at the end of the day, he made the play.
This is exactly what bothers me about the Tom Brady stuff. They won in spite of him, not because of him.
In spite of him? He's the guy that drove him down for that goal and touchdown.
Gina, I think we were right in our analysis. We just had no way of knowing that the Rams would not use a healthy Todd Gurley in the pass game.
Yeah.
We were pretty right about the defense. They slowed down the run. I mean, if you would have told me the Rams would hold the Patriots to 13 points, I think I'd put all my money on the Rams to win big. You know what I mean?
And yep.
But for whatever reason, Belichick just figured out the Rams' offense. Goff played like crap. Like, they didn't adjust. And I am dying to know the real story about Todd Gurley, because they kept bringing up that he's healthy, he's fine. Well, play the freaking best running back in the league.
Yeah.
He's an MVP candidate for most of the year, and you don't even use him. It's just frustrating.
As crazy as that game was, I think it really comes down to three plays, and one of them was completed, and the other two weren't, and that was the difference. I mean, if either of the Brandon Cooks passes are caught, it's probably a different football game. The Patriots made one critical play, the Gronkowski pass, and that was an unbelievable pass by Tom, and that was the only good thing he did in the whole game. And that proved to be the difference, you know?
You're forgetting one crucial play, Matt. And that was the week before when the Rams interfered with the Saints, because the Saints would have beat the Patriots. So you forgot about that play.
Agreed. Rams didn't deserve to be there.
Are you joking? Or are you serious about that, Jordan?
I'm being serious.
You think the Saints would have won?
The Saints would have won that game. Yes. I think Drew Brees is a much better quarterback than Goff. Which is amazing.
Yes, definitely.
I don't know.
And the Saints this season had a better defense than the Rams. But I think, or at least on par, I think I like the Saints' chances to score more than 3 points.
I can't believe they only scored 3 points. They had so many opportunities to win that game. It's unbelievable. I'm still sick about it.
I think the Saints would have game plan.
What?
Yeah, they would have. The Saints would have used Kamara. I agree. I think that the Rams' usage of Todd Gurley was baffling. But I do think the Patriots do have a lot to do with it, and I think they exposed Goff. Goff, I think, is solid, but I think you kind of saw some of his limitations, right? Or at least, I know he's still young, so he's got room to develop, but, you know, the Patriots' defensive game plan was basically, we're going to, like, shut down the run and close out on the flat so that, like, you can't really go to your running backs. And we're going to make Goff beat us with his arm, and he couldn't get it done. Like, he just, and I don't think he's, I don't know, I think we kind of saw that he's not, at least not right now, he's just not quite that quarterback that's going to take you to the next level.
The most depressing thing for me is realizing that the Patriots are going to go to two more Super Bowls in a row. Because they have an unbelievable amount of draft picks, so they're just going to load up. And then they don't need Tom Brady to be any good to win a Super Bowl. So he was mediocre in the last two games. He had one touchdown and three picks, should have had another. They won without him doing anything special.
He put up like, what, 500-plus yards passing in two games, though? Like, maybe it's not great, but that's pretty solid. I mean, especially in the playoffs against two teams that you're not supposed to beat.
Yeah, but come on. I
give credit to Belichick, personally.
What?
I would give credit to Belichick, personally, his defensive schemes the last 2 weeks.
I was going to say, if I learned anything from the Super Bowl, it's that Belichick doesn't get enough credit. I mean, to overcome the things that they overcame the season and win a Super Bowl is—it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is pretty remarkable.
They weren't even that good, and they won a Super Bowl. This is like the worst New England team they've ever had, and they won a Super Bowl.
feel like that team is just, they're just different, man. When it comes to playoff time, like, it feels like that defense is kind of sketchy during the regular season, and then they just lock it down in the playoffs. And then, you know, Brady always seems like, even if he doesn't have, like, a spectacular performance, I mean, I don't know. Even when it was tied 3-3 and New England had the ball, like, I felt like, yeah, there's no question in my mind that, like, Brady was going to, you know, drive him down and win the game for him.
If you've listened to
stretching D Ford.
I know he blew it.
Line up offside.
I mean, Tom Brady did make the plays, but if you heard some of the stories that have come out about the Super Bowl today, you really have to give that final drive the credit to Josh McDaniels, because he Dwayne Allen tells this story on multiple outlets where McDaniels comes over before that drive and is like, all right. We didn't practice this, but I think this is going to work. Five wide with two tight ends and a running back on the far side of the field, and we're just going to throw. And it was like, that's a luxury you have with someone like Tom Brady and Edelman and a team that's been together so long, but McDaniels just threw together this backyard formation, and it worked. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, so you're saying that McDaniels basically is like, let's go 5-1 and let my, you know, quarterback win the game for me.
No, I'm saying our quarterback can't read the defense right now, so we've got to cook up something we've never practiced to help our quarterback move the ball down the field. And then it did. So that's what I'm saying.
Hey, guys, I got to go.
All right. Sorry. Jordan, thanks for joining. Dave, same. It was a pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
Pleasure as always, guys. Go Kings.
All right, see you, man. Thanks for listening to the latest episode of the Matt Biamonte podcast. Feel free to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and of course, the Anchor app, which is a great platform for listening to podcasts. Something I highly encourage if you are an Anchor podcast listener. I love feedback from you, the listeners. And so you can drop messages through the Anchor app. And of course, you can always reach out to me on Twitter. The more interaction, the better. So thank you to all of you that listen. And I'm looking forward to many more exciting podcasts.